Okay, welcome, and it's good to see you. Now, we've just heard the story of Jesus talking about the man who builds his house upon the rock, the man who builds his house upon the sand. That's from Matthew chapter 7. And many of us are familiar with that story, and we instinctively know we don't have to be a superb construction engineer or particularly clever to know that if you're going to build a building, you need good foundations, and the taller the building, the deeper and the better foundations that you need. And we know that unsteady ground and poor foundations spells trouble. We know that storms will come. It's not always guaranteed to be good times, and things will shift, things will change and turn around. And if your foundations are not good, when those stormy times come, when things shift, that could spell disaster. So the natural question for every person is to flip from physical buildings to our lives and to ask, what are the foundations for your life? What is your life based on? And then, following on from that question, are those foundations going to be sound when storms come? Because storms will come. So, will your foundations prove to be good, or will they prove to be lacking? Now, Jesus, listen carefully to what Jesus says. He says, like the man who hears my words and puts them into practice. Those make for the good foundations. So, in other words, it's not just to know of Jesus, or even to know of Jesus and the things he said and the stories, to maybe even to tell some stories. It's not just the ability to know those words and maybe even repeat them, but to put them into practice makes for the good foundations. In other words, putting into practice is the foundations for your basis of your life. What do you have as your fundamental principles? The things that set the priorities in your life for the long haul. If you know about Jesus, but do nothing with that and just live the same as everyone else, then Jesus says that's no better than building on sand. It will be found wanting. The other thing, when Jesus says these words, what does he mean? Well, he's actually finishing a whole sermon on the mounts, as it's known, literally, because they were halfway up a mountainside or somewhere, and Jesus was talking to the disciples, the crowds gathered round, and he used it as a natural amphitheater. And it starts back in chapter 5 as Matthew records it, and it's a whole spiel, chapters 5 through to 7, and you can view it as a manifesto document. You know that political parties, when there's an election, they produce a booklet, and they spell out what they want, what they want to do, and what they want to see. Well, you can understand this long speech that Jesus gives halfway up the mountainside as his longhand manifesto. And in it, he talks about a whole different way of life, a different way of seeing things. So he starts off in chapter 5 with the blessings, and then he talks about being salt and light in the world. And then he goes on to talk about the law, not just obeying the law, but fulfilling it by transforming it and going beyond the law. He then illustrates that by talking about loving our enemies, going the extra mile. And then he turns to our sense of treasure. What do we truly treasure in life? And then he turns to anxiety about not needing to worry because our trust is in God. And then he turns his attention to how we look at other people, how we see other people, and talks about that practically by saying, well, we shouldn't be judging. And then on to confidently asking God for good things. Well, on one level, it would be good to say, you know, these words are radical. These words are great. These words are different to how most people think. And I'm going to use those words to lay as my foundation. Yeah, I'm going to try and live out some of these principles in my life. I'm going to act on those words. And that would be a good thing to do. I think if anyone did that, then the world would be a better place for someone doing that. But actually, subtly, Jesus goes even further than that. Well, I'm now in Matthew chapter 7, because speech ranges through chapter 5, 6 into 7. And about verse 12 of chapter 7, in this long speech, he shifts again. And he starts talking about entering by the narrow gate instead of a wide gate. And he's saying, look, you know, anyone can come in through a wide gate, but he's interested in the people who come in through the narrow gate. And then he talks of false prophets, and he says, well, you can recognize them by their bad fruit. And he's saying, look, yeah, if someone is fundamentally wrong, misplaced in the core of their lives, then that's going to come out in different ways. And then he talks about true and false disciples, true and false followers. And he illustrates that by how the true ones, not only are they producing good fruit, but they're putting the words into practice. But he finishes with that by talking about those are the people who know me and I know them. So he kind of reaches this climax of saying, well, fundamentally, ultimately, this is about knowing and being known by Jesus. Only then, having said all that, does he then say, well, the wise person is the one who hears my words, puts them into practice, is like the one who builds on the rock. The foolish person is like the person who builds on the sands. Only after all that does he talk about the wise and foolish builder. So Jesus is going further. He's not simply saying, look, here's some good sayings for life. You know, pick up a few of these, maybe pick up two or three, and these will be good for your life going forward. He's not just saying that. He's going further than that. He's saying, no, look, base your life on me. I am the rock. I'm the good foundation. Quite an outrageous claim, quite a wacky claim. But what he's doing is echoing stuff that is already in the scriptures. I'm going to turn now to one of the prophets, Isaiah. And Isaiah was this chap who heard loads from God, and he spoke it out. He or maybe others wrote it down. And there's a passage in chapter 28, verses 14 to 19. I'm not going to read it, but I'm just going to talk about some of the things that God says through Isaiah in that passage, 28, verses 14 to 19. You see, it talks about a people who have looked elsewhere for their help, who have looked elsewhere for their refuge for when the storm comes. And it doesn't use nice words. It says, look, those people, they've made a covenant, a deal, an agreement with death. So it's pretty hard-hitting stuff. Now, in practice, the context of when Isaiah was speaking this stuff, he was speaking to the Israelite people. And they were facing a challenge. They were facing being overrun by a huge army, a foreign power, the Assyrians. And they thought, well, to protect us from the Assyrians, we are going to look to the Egyptians, and the Egyptians will surely come to our rescue and surely save us from being overrun by these nasty Assyrian people. So it's the Assyrians are described in this passage as an overwhelming scourge. A scourge that's going to come upon them, but they've made a deal with death, which is the Egyptians, thinking that the Egyptians can help them. But then see how it goes on in verse 16. But God says, see, I lay a stone in your land. It's called Zion in the poetry of the language used. A tested stone, a precious cornerstone for a sure foundation. The one who relies on it, that precious stone that God is laying, will never be stricken with panic. And then it goes on, I will make justice the measuring line and righteousness the plumb line. Now, if you've seen a builder at work, and yeah, we've got work going on at the manse, so this is all firsthand for us. You see the tools that they use, and they lay out lines to make sure the lines are straight and the angles are good and so on. And what this passage is saying is that the builder's tools, based on this precious cornerstone, this sure foundation, will be a measuring line of justice and a plumb line of righteousness. In other words, the builder's tools will be based on the characteristics of God, of justice and righteousness. This is quite different to what the people have done who've made this deal with the Egyptians to try and save them. And of course, so it goes on in verse 18. Well, you know, that foundation, their reliance on the Egyptians, that's going to fail. That's not going to work. It's a bad foundation. They will be overrun. The scourge will come across them. You see how Jesus, in saying about the good and the bad foundation, the rock and the sand, he's alluding to this imagery in their ancient prophecy and poetry. He's saying, look, you got to have a good foundation, and God promised that he would lay for us a good foundation for your lives. So again, the question, what do you base your life on? What is your life foundations? Now let's look at today's culture. Today's culture is certainly here in the West, it's basically based on consumerism. The whole economy is based on consumption. And as long as people are consuming it, it doesn't matter whether they're buying new houses or they're drinking coffee and eating cake or dining out. As long as they're consuming, it's all good. And so the pandemic that we've got now with the virus and the lockdown, it's a real headache for governments around the world because consumption has collapsed. And government actions are frantically saying, how do we get the economy going again? And how do we do that? How do we get consuming going once again? And we've seen governments across the world do this. We've heard it from Trump. We can see Boris wrestling with this problem. And they're not the only ones. But this is not new. Just under 20 years ago, in 2001, the September 11th Twin Towers attack, the planes flew into the towers came down, and it was a calamity for New York, it was a calamity for the US. World travel on airlines, of course, suddenly plummeted. 2 weeks after those attacks, the president of the US at the time, President Bush, the second version of President Bush, he said this. He said, this is a speech to the nation. He said, get yourselves down to Disneyland, Florida, take your families and enjoy life. In other words, go and spend your money. Because he wanted people to be spending again, to be consuming again, because the whole system is predicated on people spending and consuming more and more and more. Now, buying and selling is okay in itself. It's not wrong. But growth based on relentless consumption clearly is a problem. It's shallow, never satisfies, always needs more. And of course, you know, let's think about it. How much raw material have we got? Well, we've got one planet Earth. That's what we've got. So relentless consumption, relentless growth, surely cannot work, because there's only one finite planet to mine, to consume, to take resources from. So sooner or later, there's going to be a massive problem. So today's consumer culture, its foundation, we can characterize with this simple phrase: I shop, therefore I am. I shop, therefore I am. Now, back in the time of Isaiah, the Israelites, they were looking against the Assyrians. They looked to the Egyptians to help them. In the time of Jesus, remember that the land where they lived was overrun by the Romans, but fortunes had slightly changed for them. Powers had come and go. The Romans had come, but the Romans had commissioned Herod to be a puppet king, and he had rebuilt the temple, and he had built it big. I mean, it was much, much bigger than it used to be. And in there was a massive slab of foundation stone. And so Jewish thoughts at the time of Jesus would have said, well, things might be bad and it's a bit rough having the Romans trampled all over us, but as long as we can look to the temple and see that the temple is still standing in Jerusalem, well, we can trust that things will be basically okay. The modern day equivalent in our culture would say, as long as I can still click and collect or shop and have Tesco deliver my groceries, then things might be bad, but they'll still be okay. Or they might say, as long as I can look to Amazon and my Amazon Prime subscription is still valid, then things might be rough, but I'll still be okay. That would be the modern day equivalent. You know, Amazon's still functioning. I can still click and buy stuff. So I'll be all right. Another cultural foundation today that goes alongside I shop, therefore I am, is the phrase I feel, therefore I am. Go by feelings, and feelings fuels a lot of stuff. It fuels a lot of contemporary issues that we have today. Actually, this year we were supposed to be looking at contemporary issues, and the pandemic and the virus has kind of messed with my plans. But we were going to look at issues like human sexuality, and a lot of that is fueled by this culture of I feel, therefore I am. In other words, you tie what you do and how you go about life to how you feel. And of course, you know, we know that there's going to be problems with that, because our feelings are up and down and can be all over the place. But it resonates with I shop, therefore I am, because consumerism loves to play into our feelings. Consumerism loves to use our feelings to blur the lines and confuse what we need with what we want. And change things, make us think, rather than I want that, make us think I need that, when of course we don't need it at all. It's just nice to have. So consumerism, I shop, therefore I am, and I feel, therefore I am, go well together and kind of can create havoc. Another cultural phrase, which actually is less so nowadays, but is still valid, is characterized by that famous saying of the philosopher Descartes, I think, therefore I am. And I'm going to use that as a caricature for putting all your trust in science. And science is good, by the way, and I'm a scientist myself. But it's that thinking that science will have the answer to everything. And we still have that in our culture today. You know, we'll find a vaccine and that'll be our way out of this pandemic. So it still runs through society. The problem, of course, is that all these foundations, I shop, therefore I am, I feel, therefore I am, I think we can work things out, therefore I am, is that actually as foundations, they're not so good. They're all shallow. They can all be found wanting. And when the storms or the scourges or the pandemics come, then they can be found wanting and seen to not be so good. So the foundation I want to suggest is the following. I am in Christ, therefore I am. My foundations are rooted in Him, the precious cornerstone, the sure foundation laid for us by the grace of God. There I find my identity. There I find my security. There I find my ability to live from one day to the next. In there I can trust. And with our foundation in Christ, that means we live different. We don't live just to consume. We don't live just based on our feelings, but we trust ourselves in Jesus, into the hands of the living God and the guidance of His Spirit. That sets the fundamentals for our whole of our life, whether it's our partner decisions of who might be our lifelong partner, our job, our career decisions, the kind of house that we would aspire to live in, the lifestyle that we want to live out. All this stuff traces to in Christ, therefore I am, which may be different to everyone around us. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't enjoy life. It doesn't mean you can't go on a holiday. It doesn't mean that you can't have a cream tea. But it does drive your priorities. It means that as we live in these uncertain times, we do so with Christ as our sure foundation, as our hope, trusting in Him that will be solid and withstand the storms, the scourges that we face. And that means that when we talk and chat with our friends, with our colleagues at work, with other people, we effectively reveal our value system is different, because we're based on a different foundation. It means that as we share, we don't just vainly hope that things will be better. We don't just vainly hope that the politicians will sort it out, or maybe there'll be a vaccine one day, or the government does the right thing. No, we trust solidly because our trust is in God, His provision and His certainty. That's a better foundation. I'm not saying that life for us will be easy. It will be hard, just as it is for our neighbor. But with the storms coming, our foundation in Christ will stand the test of time. Let's pause and pray for a moment.